And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. What's going on, peeps? Joe, how are we doing?
Like if someone, and I imagine there's hundreds of thousands, if not close to a million people do this, wake up right at 6 a.m.
Sure.
And turn on the stream to watch us. Is it like stunning when it's our faces like this?
Like very close?
Versus the studio shot? Like, does that take some adjusting?
I hope it's stunning in a good way. I hope that this is an exciting time.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, breathtaking.
Kinda, yeah.
Really.
It's really.
More the word, really.
The more we think about it, it's probably the best way to start your morning is staring directly at the two of us.
All up close and personal.
That's right.
Like, yeah, it's like I normally, as we talk, you know, on this, when we do it like this, usually I have, like, other web pages up, you know, so I don't look at this. But, like, I just flipped to it now, and my goodness.
It's beautiful.
You look good, man.
Thank you. Yeah. You look great, too.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, that's close. I need the high angle, you know? That's what I need to figure out.
Get actually, you, like, a selfie stick.
Well, you know what? I could just, I could put some, I've done this before, you know, for Zoom meetings, put some books, you know, under it.
Yeah, put, like, a box under it or something.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. You'll see the difference. Makes a big difference, have that high angle.
Could be something that happens here. Go find you some books.
Takes the double chin away. See what I'm saying?
I think you look pretty good. Pretty good looking guy.
Well, that's
great hair,
man.
It's awesome.
How many segments on this are we going to do today?
About how good looking you are?
Yeah.
I was thinking at least two.
I mean, I think that could be a whole show at some point.
Could be. What? How good looking is Joe Rexrow? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Is the poll out there? We can put the poll out
there.
We
could.
Yeah.
Lots of things, lots of options with Joe Rexrode's appearance today. Looks very good. Off to a great start on this Friday morning. Rip-roaring on this Friday morning. We got a lot to get to today. We're going to have Jason Kersey on from The Athletic at 7 o'clock. TD at 8 o'clock for our weekly update with him. And then Scott Burnside at 9 o'clock with The Athletic as well to talk all things NHL. The NHL draft, first round underway tonight as well. So the NHL moving fast and furious, and we also had a press conference yesterday with David Poile, Nashville Predators general manager, in the immediate aftermath of the expansion draft, and looking ahead to the NHL entry draft coming up this weekend. And honestly, there wasn't much that came out of the David Poile press conference yesterday, but one of the things that did was our own Jared Stillman and David Poile and the back and forth that happened in that press conference that really took over Preds Twitter for a period of time yesterday as well. A couple of question and answers from Stillman to Poile that generated a lot of attention. Here is what Jared Stillman asked yesterday at the David Poile press conference that got Preds Twitter all fired up to begin yesterday morning. Here was that question from Jared.
Can you take us through why you would protect Janot over a guy like Yarncroke, who has contributed so much for so long? Or a guy like Sissons, obviously. And how is the relationship with Sissons after not being protected?
Again, with all due respect, you don't know as much as I know in terms of what I truly believed and knew was going to happen in this expansion draft from talking to Seattle. I think our younger players, you mentioned Janot's name, which is a good name. Another name is Carrier, as a young defenseman. Both of these players came from Milwaukee. Both of these players were not particularly ticketed to play a lot of games for us this year. And both of those players played very important parts in our team as the year, especially in the second half of the season, where, you know, Carrier played with Josi in the top pairing. Janot, Sissons, Trent, and Olivier formed what we called our identity line, herd line, if you will. They were our fourth line, but I think everybody who was watching this closely saw that they played in a lot more valuable situations than our third line. And I think they're a big part of what we have going forward. There's a price to pay in expansion. Some teams, again, respectfully, didn't have to give up as much as us. We just were in that situation where the players that we had, who we had to protect, there had to be somebody to make about. Make available, and I, my final decision was that we had to protect our younger players. I mean,
So that was David Poile yesterday and asking a question, or Jared Stillman asking the question, David Poile on the response. And the thing that got everything going, Joe, was with all due respect, you don't know as much as I know, referring to the expansion draft process. And, you know, what David Poile is saying there is, yeah, I had some conversations with Seattle and felt pretty good that if I didn't protect Tanner Janot, they were probably going to select Tanner Janot. And that is the way that the Predators went about it. They protected Tanner Janot. Cale Yarncroke left exposed. And Cale Yarncroke now a member of the Seattle Kraken. I thought, you know, that was a question that if Jared did not ask, I was in line to ask. That was the question that I wanted to know yesterday. So, like, a very fair question by Jared Stillman. The reaction on Twitter, I think, just like to have fun at Jared's expense. But I thought it was a good question by Jared yesterday.
Well, so this exposed a few things. One, I have to take a bit of responsibility for the Preds' Twitter, you know, blow up because this is a problem with Twitter. I mean, David Poile, like you said, all due respect, you don't know as much as I know. And then he said, in terms of, you know, Seattle, blah, 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 you know. So my tweet was, all due respect, you don't know as much as I know, dot, dot, dot. Then went to, there had to be somebody to make available. My final decision was protect our younger players, okay? So if you just read the beginning of Poile's, which I think was a slight dunk on Jared, but if you just read those words, it reads a little bit more like, you're an idiot, shut up. That's right. That's not the tone. I mean, I don't think that would probably ever be David Poile's tone.
No.
So right there, it was already a little, and a lot of things get Twitterfied like that. And so, I mean, I guess I could have tried to stretch it out and clarify there more, but people went nuts with it. But the bigger takeaway for me is, like, anyone else asks that question, anyone else has that interaction with him in the Preds Twitter universe, and it's like, yeah, good question, all right. And instead it's like, wait a minute, I love you again, David Poile. Yes. You got mad at Jared. And that was silly. And look, Jared's other question was about – now, Jared's other question included, like, asking Poile, like, what his superiors think of him, which, of course, no one would answer.
Right.
But it was also fine, and, you know, and it's that was basically the lack of return on big investments in players. Everyone wants to know that, right? Everyone has that question. I mean, we all know what the situation is. But it's just, I think Preds Twitter, look, I understand, you know, Jared's takes. I understand that, look, I've sat with Jared on his show and made fun of him for an entire show about his Arvidsson hatred years ago. I mean, you know, this is, so, like, I get that. Like, he has some takes that you have every right to dunk on. But, man, I mean, you go from everybody's mad at Poile, you know, and things have gone a certain way, and is he on the hot seat? Is he not on the hot seat? What's going on? What's the direction? And because Jared's the one involved, all of a sudden it's like, you know, you do a 180. So I think that's a Preds Twitter fail. And I think Jared, and I need to do this in the very first segment because hopefully he's not listening. he gets a lot of bad rap. People go way overboard with this stuff. We've talked about this before, but it's like, okay, we can all have fun, but Jared does a good show. And I tell you what, go around to any market in this country, okay, and find – most markets have some particularly outspoken sports talk hosts. You know, there's a variety of different approaches and you know, personalities. You will not find a ton who approach it like Jared does, who then show up and ask the questions and make themselves accountable. I mean, I know for a fact, I go to, you know, Detroit and in Michigan, there's some people who take and just fire away, and they never show up to anything. They never put themselves in the crossfire. And Jared does consistently. So you got to respect that. Now, later we have a segment where I will rip the hell out of Jared to make me feel better about saying nice things about him.
It's about balance here on the show.
Yeah. Well, usually it's more just – well, usually it's trying not to
– mention his name.
To talk about him too much because he said something the day before that I was like, what? But we'll get to that one later.
Yes, we will.
But, I mean, again, like the whole thing is Preds fans. I mean, you know, there's – like shooting the messenger is always a thing.
Yeah.
But with him, it's like, ready, fire, aim, and just, yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. And look, I mean, I suppose he's earned that to a point. Michelle was asking me yesterday after the show, we were talking about like Jared and Preds fans. I'm like, yeah, I mean, he got introduced, when was that, a couple years ago at Bridgestone? And
yeah,
pretty hearty booze in there.
Yeah.
Which, of course, he was like, yes, you know.
Yes.
It's an interesting relationship.
It is an interesting relationship. And look, you know, those are fine questions, I thought, yesterday. To your point, the second question about basically the ownership and how they feel about the job he's done signing these long-term contracts, like, I don't know what David Poyle is supposed to say there. It just, he's not going to answer that question. So,
yeah, but
it is what it is. It's not, I mean, I didn't think there's anything necessarily wrong with the question, but you don't really expect anything to come from that one. I thought the first question was absolutely fair. I mean, when they protected Tanner Jeannot, we came in here Monday morning and we spent 2 hours talking about why in the world did they protect Tanner Jeannot. Now, we talked about maybe David Poyle knows something that we don't in these conversations with Seattle, and some clarification on that yesterday. It sounds like David Poyle, if we take him at his word, knew something that we didn't know.
Well, to your point about you were going to ask that same kind of question, I'm sure a lot of other people were too. And I do wish Jared, because I was going to specifically ask, did you get information like that led you to believe that? But he eventually got to that. And so I asked a question for Vingan about Richardson and Goodbranson, who sadly for you.
Yeah. Good, it's a tough day.
Goodbranson, no more playing hockey.
Lost Callie Yonkrook and Air Goodbranson in 2 days.
Yeah, it's tough. Also, the questions about the, Jared threw that in, but then Paul Skorbina asked later too. The what's the relationship going to be like? You know, like how do you feel about? Which, I mean, I think about that stuff, but I also actually agree with what Poyle said, which is basically, Are people professionals here? I mean, that's not what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, eh.
Yeah.
You're a pro hockey player, and I agree with the idea of maybe you'd use this. Maybe it helps you. I think a lot of athletes who reach this level find every little slight they can find.
Or just look in the mirror and say, yeah, I need to play a little bit better.
That too.
You know, I was not on the protected list. You're still here. Maybe play a little bit better. Then you won't find yourself in these situations. That's probably the way that I would approach it. It's just me.
Yeah. If your approach is, I'm mad at David Poyle, yeah, and I'm going to go sit in the corner and pout, then you're not going to be in the lineup.
So the NHL draft coming up today, this is going to be pretty interesting in terms of there's a lot of information out there on some players. There's not very much on other players that are draft eligible this year. And Elliot Friedman came out with a piece last night, and the general manager anonymously quoted to him saying, somebody on Friday in the first round is going to take somebody that we have in the fourth round. And you're just going to be like, huh, how about that? Could be an interesting NHL draft tonight.
Not a bad year to maybe send a few picks to someone else, yeah, and get a few for next year.
Maybe so. maybe a popular route that teams try to make happen tonight. And as we know, the NHL draft always a pretty active time for trades as well. So we'll see if anything happens on that front tonight with the Nashville Predators and whether or not any more trades are made. And speaking of trades and or potential acquisitions, Elliot Friedman was on yesterday with Darren Donegan Chase and threw out a very interesting name that maybe the Predators could be in pursuit of. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Texas and Oklahoma, all the buzz yesterday. We talked about it a lot here on this show, potentially joining the SEC. The Big 12 agreement that they have, the grant of rights, expires in 2025. But Texas and Oklahoma seem to be very serious about joining the SEC, and to the point where there was a Big 12, I guess, conference call yesterday, and Oklahoma and Texas representatives were not on it. And we know that, Joe. I mean, sometimes, as you said on Twitter, sometimes that Zoom link can be very hard to find, and Oklahoma and Texas just magically didn't find their way on the Big 12 Zoom link yesterday.
Yeah, it's tough. Well, we've all missed some, right? Well, we've all had our issues. The Wi-Fi is a little wonky.
Yeah.
There's so many things that I'm sure it's just a coincidence that those are the two who weren't on there.
I'm sure it is, too. with everything swirling around. So it looks to me like this is going to happen. And I don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but you know, just looking at everything that's been circulating, the conversations that we had yesterday, and the more information that's come out, it looks like Texas and Oklahoma are on a path to being the next two members of the SEC. And there's been mixed reaction to that. We had a poll question yesterday that was a little bit over 50% shaded to no, they don't want to see Oklahoma and Texas come into the SEC. But the reality is the money that could be involved here is going to ultimately speak louder than anything else. And I think Oklahoma and Texas are going to find their way into the SEC. So if that happens, Joe Rexroad, I ask you, who benefits the most from Oklahoma and Texas coming into the SEC? Which is, who are some people, some programs, some leagues out there, the money? What when you factor in everything that happens and how not only this could affect the SEC, but really college football and college athletics as a whole, who benefits the most from Texas and Oklahoma making the jump to the SEC?
Yeah, it's a good question. We did a roundtable at The Athletic with some of our SEC writers, including me, about this very topic, and struggled to come up with winners other than, like, competitively, I have a hard time finding that. Now, someone mentioned, well, okay, maybe now, you know, G. Allen Taylor, who covers Florida for us, was like, maybe the number five, number six SEC finishers, because of ridiculous strength of schedule, you know, have resumes, you know, that they could get them at large bids in this expected 12-team playoff. You're pushing everyone down the pecking order. So competitively, it's way more, to me, way more losers than winners. I mean, I guess you could say Alabama's a winner because Alabama is still going to beat the crap out of those two teams. So now their schedule just drives me. Like I don't see like either of those programs coming in and shaking things up at the very top of the SEC. So, hey, now Alabama, you are still the best, and you are now in the ultimate super conference. So if this happens, then I think the super conference model happens. And the winner is just the SEC is the winner. Hey, look, one thing I've always been kind of impressed by and sometimes puzzled by is I feel like, especially in this league, there is like this like root for the SEC, right? SEC.
There's a lot of that.
And there's, you know, SEC, Big Ten, always been a rivalry. Well, it won't be a rivalry anymore, not on the field. Like the Big Ten, there's nothing the Big Ten can do. I suppose, you know, if they finally, after decades of trying, if they were to get Notre Dame, you know, then that's a good ad. But like what kind of leftovers could the Big Ten get in terms of powerful, you know, football brands and programs that actually can compete at the highest level to even come close to matching this? I mean, I can't think of anyone. Now, they could, you know, get Kansas and have, like, a better basketball league.
Yeah.
But that's not helping you in football. So the winner is the money. All the, everyone's going to get the money. The money's going to go up. It's going to be ridiculous. And it's just, it's taken the first step in this thing that really we've been talking about. Go back to 2009, 2010, when the first huge round of realignment happened, that super conference model and, you know, breaking away and just doing your own thing. And basically, you know, Peter Burns from SEC Network kind of tweeted this idea out. Basically, like, you know, Saturday NFL. I mean, that's good. You know, if you have great games every week, so would you say that the fans in general are winners? I think you could make that case. If you have, if every week is a great game and your team can lose three games and get into the playoff. But I also think some people would look at that and say, man, that doesn't sound like college football to me.
It does not. That hurts me to think about.
So you don't like that at all?
You know, part of what makes college football so great to me is that every game actually does matter, right? Like every game in the regular season means something. And this is going to be what happens, so I'm just going ahead and embracing myself for it. But we're going to a 12-team playoff. I know it's not official yet, but it's going to happen. Texas and Oklahoma are going to be a part of the SEC. It's going to happen. And I think that there will be teams, once the 12-team playoff comes around, you'll have some three-loss teams that get in there. You'll have some, you know, some three-loss teams that somehow fight their way to, if not the national championship, maybe the Final Four. And then it does have that NFL feel to it, which, again, there's nothing wrong with having an NFL feel to it. That's what college football, I think, deep down wants, because they realize how successful the NFL is and how much people enjoy watching the NFL, and they want to be more like the NFL. They won't say that, but they do. They want to be more like the NFL. As someone who has grown up with college football being my favorite type of football, like, I love the NFL. I've always loved college football more. This, to me, and what's going on right now in college sports, kind of feels like the death of college football, and you're moving into a new era. I know it's not, I mean, it's a little dramatic, and I realize that, but what I'm saying is the college football that I know and love is not going to be the same. I'm not saying that it's necessarily going to be worse. I just don't know. And it's not going to be the same as they move forward. And the idea of three teams getting into the playoff, even if the playoff is 12 teams, and I realize that, that just bothers me.
The idea of three SEC teams, you're saying?
Well, three lost teams.
Oh, three lost teams.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, I mean, that is what, to me, part of what makes college football so great is you got to almost be perfect. Like, you've got to win every week if you really want to compete for a national title.
I hear what you're saying. Now, let's remember that a lot of the ability to go undefeated or have one loss or whatever is that you have four games that are a joke.
Sure.
That are charged full price and are on TV. I mean, this SEC tradition of, like, the week before rivalry week, where everyone goes out and finds the weakest FCS team they can just bludgeon.
Just tune up.
You know, it's like, you basically, this is a non-football weekend. I hate that. But then the counter to that is, so if you're not playing those programs as much and you're not basically funding their athletic departments because they get huge guarantees to play you, to basically come in and be a tomato can, what is that going to do to those programs? And I mean, it's hard because, sure, I don't want to see, group of five programs suffer and things like that. But I'm old enough to remember, and I don't love, like, Dabo's thing about, yeah, let's go back to the polls deciding. But I am old enough to remember when, you know, teams used to get ripped for their non-league schedule, you know, not being all other, like, it wasn't called Power 5 then, but, like, you know, high-level opponents. It used to be that you played good teams in your non-league schedule, and then you played your league schedule, and it was competitive football every week. And some teams still found a way to have a good record. And, again, that's the whole – it's just a different model. It does appeal to me to have more conference games. Could we see 9 SEC games? Could we see 10 SEC games?
I think 9 is a certainty. I think 9 will happen.
Yeah, I think you're right. And 10 probably – I mean, again, this is where coaches will be like, so – you want my players to have to play 10 games against other, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of different factions here. There's a lot of different people, a lot of different stakeholders. Ultimately, the stakeholders who matter, the people in charge, the coaches, are going to do whatever they're told. I would also say another thing about this whole thing, you know, to me, because I know a lot of people look at this, like, name, image, likeness, and all these things happening, the transfer portal, it feels like it's this. But this story is, to me, another example of why we're so overdue on name, image, likeness. You know, I mean, let's call this what it is. It is a massive money making industry, and so I'm glad that at least that has come.
This is a money grab by Texas and Oklahoma. They don't want to get behind the eight ball in the Big 12. I mean, that's what this is.
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't blame them, but that's what this is. So, to your point, good thing name, image, and likeness conversations are starting to really come in the fold now, and that this is now legal, because it's all about money.
Well, and another reason to me, like, everyone should just let it go.
Yeah.
People are making money. Bryce Young's making $1 million. He hasn't done anything. Great. Okay. He lives in America.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
So those they're winners, but they already were. And I kind of look at this, and I hope this is maybe a little reminder for everyone. Let's not be complete hypocrites like we've been for a century.
We'll continue this conversation when we come back, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. ESPN 1025, The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Today and every day for your viewing pleasure. Nice up-close shots of Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode today.
Okay, so here we go. Yeah. All right, so if you're watching the live stream, here's the zoom. Here's the shot on the, you know, just normal. Now, let's see how much it improves.
Joe Rexrode is placing a stack of books underneath his laptop.
One difficulty here is that I still have my wife's, extra keyboard because the T still doesn't work on my keyboard.
Well, now nothing else does too, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah.
Because I destroyed it.
That's a good point. I was trying to forget that. Okay. Yes, I don't know. It doesn't really help out that much. But you can now see my Riv shirt. The Riv. Great place in East Lansing, Michigan.
There you go.
I think this is like my flag football jersey playing for the Riv. So,
how long of a flag football player were you?
Well,
that stretched into the 30s?
No, it wasn't like a consistent thing. I think that was like it was like a game for charity.
Okay.
Now, in college, legendary. Legendary career. Find me another college newspaper quarterback who led a touchdown drive with a cigarette dangling out of his or her mouth, and, you know, I will.
And you can talk.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm trying to meet the other person in the world who's ever done that, but, you know, distinguished athleticism.
That's right. Distinguished athleticism for sure for Joe Rexrode. Here on the show.
It doesn't help that much. I'm sorry.
Well,
you look at
it. You said it would.
Yeah. Well, how about if we go like here?
You're just going to hold your computer the whole time?
I'm sure it's a really good stream right now.
Sure it is. Talking Predators, the NHL draft coming up tonight, the first round. Predators at 19th overall in the draft tonight. We'll see what happens on that front. But free agency beginning next week as well, July the 28th. The official date for free agency beginning in the NHL. And Elliot Friedman, who joins Darren Donick and Chase every week, was on with the guys yesterday and had some very interesting comments about a familiar player out there that the Predators may be interested in and may decide to pursue. Here's what Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet had to say yesterday on Darren Donick and Chase.
You said the Predators may be sniffing around or kicking tires on Landeskog. I'm just going to ask you, with what you know. We all know he's a tremendous player, but we also talk a lot here about these long contracts. And, you know, really, for the most part, if we're just being honest, they haven't worked out. And I think it's a scary proposition for any team. I would love to go back and look through the history books and find out how many long, you know, 7, 8 or more year contracts, how many of them really worked out when you get towards the end. But if it was 7 years, would you sign Landeskog for a 7-year contract at I don't know what number you're going to throw out?
Well,
would you do that?
It would be a bit. I think it would be a big number. That's one. I like Landeskog a lot. I really do. I think he's got a great reputation around the league. He's the captain there for a reason. Nathan MacKinnon is a really intense, driven guy, and he's a very intense guy around their room, and I think Landeskog does a really good job of helping manage that, which is really important. Your captain kind of has to be a buffer between players and coaches and each other sometimes. They haven't broken through, but they've been a very good team in the last few years, and he's a key part of that.
So that was Elliot Friedman discussing Gabriel Landeskog, currently of the Colorado Avalanche, the captain of the Avalanche, potentially available as a free agent and potentially something that maybe the Nashville Predators could be interested in pursuing. Joe Rexrode, Gabriel Landeskog, I believe, is 28 at the moment. He'll be 29 next season on November 23rd. Obviously, has been very productive the last few years. He's a very good player. Do you like the idea of maybe pursuing Gabriel Landeskog in free agency? Would you rather save the money and avoid signing anyone to long-term contracts at the moment? What do you think about the idea of Landeskog being available and that the Predators might decide to pursue him in free agency?
Well, let's put Landeskog on this team next year. What is it?
I don't think it's a ton different. I mean, I think he's a very good player. I always am hesitant with guys like him because, don't get me wrong, he's very good. But let's just look at these numbers for a second. 53 points in 2015-16. Let's go even before that. 59 points in 14-15. 53 and six in 15-16. 33 in 16-17. 62 in 17-18.
And then all of a sudden, that's the year that you know that young team played the Preds in the first round.
All of a sudden, he gets to 75. And then 44 and 54 games, which is pretty good. And then last year, 52 points, 54 games. All those things are good and sound great. It also coincides with the time that Nathan MacKinnon is absolutely lighting things up. He spent a lot of time playing with Nathan MacKinnon.
It's the best line in hockey.
Exactly. So I'm not saying that Gabriel Landeskog isn't a good player, because he's a very good player. And quite frankly, he does some things that a lot of forwards on this team haven't been willing to do the last few years. So that part of it's good. And if they signed Gabriel Landeskog, I think he could come here and be a good player. But he does not have Nathan MacKinnon here. And that, to me, is a big difference. It's a big difference in terms of production, because people are going to look, and he's going to come in here, if this were to happen, and they're going to say, wow, he had 52 points in 54 games last year. That's almost a point per game. 44 points in 54 games the year before that. He's a point per game player, essentially. And that is not going to happen here, not with no Nathan MacKinnon. I'm just here to tell you. So that's a big risk to take on a long-term contract.
Yes. Now, I like what Friedman said about Landeskog in the room, and you know, obviously you love the idea of another leader. You're losing so much of that, even with some of these young guys. You know, you have a good captain in Yossi. You still have some veterans, of course, and you got some young guys who are showing good intangibles. But a guy who would come in and not just be a potentially great player but be a big voice – sounds appealing, but like, what's the number? I feel like this is going to be a classic example of someone being overpaid because of, yes, earning it, production. He's been a heck of a player, but like you said, you can't ignore what he's been a part of and how much that's benefited him. I mean, it's always tough. It's different, you know, trying to compare hockey to other sports, but I think of like Bud Dupree is going to be so interesting here with the Titans, because I don't think there's any doubt that he has benefited, you know, from playing with other great players, especially T.J. Watt. Different deal. It's not a perfect comparison. But I think, you know, Landeskog doesn't strike me as someone who's so good that in any situation he can just take over and produce and you know, put the puck in the back of the net. I think MacKinnon is that guy.
Yes. And look, it's not like they've just played exclusively together. There have been times where Landeskog's been on a different line. He's still been good. He's played some with Kadri this year. So it's not like it's just been exclusively MacKinnon. It has been a lot MacKinnon that he's played with. And that line of MacKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen, I think if it's not been number one in the NHL the last few years, it's certainly been up there in terms of best lines in hockey the last few years. So, look, if I'm the Predators, I would absolutely kick the tires on it. I would see what the price would be. I want to say he was making $4.5 million per year during his last contract. That's going to go up significantly. Now, how far does that go up? And also, you still do have to pay Philip Forsberg. So are you going to be paying Philip Forsberg $7.5, $8 million a year, whatever that number is, and then turn around and pay Landeskog $8 million per year? And then pay Johansson and Duchesne $8 million per year. It just seems to me like the approach that I would take if I'm the Predators is probably just let this one slide and then figure out what you've got in your young guys.
If you had a choice, you're a GM and you had a choice, you know, whatever, 5-year deal, same money right now for Forsberg or Landeskog, who would you take?
I would take Forsberg.
I would too.
Yeah.
I would too.
I think it's close, I would take Forsberg.
I think Forsberg, well, he's younger.
Yeah.
For one thing. But I actually think he still creates more for himself when he plays that way than Landeskog does.
I do too. Now, somebody's immediately going to say, well, Landeskog had 34 goals, 75 points in 18-19. Forsberg's never approached 75 points. I hear you. Again, Nathan MacKinnon, pretty good. You put Forsberg with Nathan MacKinnon, those numbers that we've talked about with Forsberg of 40 goals and point per game, I think he could get there with Nathan MacKinnon.
Forsberg was on a line that not too long ago was one of the best in the league too.
Yep.
Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson were his partners. Good players. But again, let's compare that to Landeskog.
Right. It's a little bit different. Especially, I mean, with both guys. Not only MacKinnon, but Rantanen as well. Pretty good player. So we'll see what happens. We're just a few days away from free agency in the NHL. Landeskog looks like he's going to be available. I'm honestly surprised that the Avalanche have not found a way to make this work. He is their captain. I know that he's taking a hard line on money, and he's probably looking for $8 million, $8.5 million. To me, that's a lot of money for Gabriel Landeskog. And I don't know. Maybe in the 11th hour, Colorado finds a way to figure it out. But if he hits the free agent market, it's a big name out there in a year where there's not a whole lot of big names in free agency.
From their perspective, I understand how things went this year. Very disappointing, but I mean, I want to run that back.
Yeah,
we know all about running things back and how that can go. But
I'm running that team back.
I'd feel awfully bad about losing him right now.
Yeah, I would too. And that's a big loss if that happens. And we'll see what they do with the money if they're not able to pay Gabriel Landeskog what he wants. When we come back, we will get back into the Texas and Oklahoma discussion. Who stands the most to gain? Who stands the most to lose by Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't miss the first ever Smashville Summer Spectacular presented by Lee Company, featuring something for everyone in the family today through Sunday. Preds giveaways, ice making seminars, job fair, Nashville locker room sidewalk sale, photos with the King Clancy Award, which was won this year by Pecorine, and the Norris Trophy won last year by Roman Yossi, and much more. It's a free event, plus enter to win lower level half season tickets. Visit NashvillePredators.com/spectacular for full event details. This is a weekend that you don't want to miss. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking Texas and Oklahoma potentially joining the SEC. We're going to have Jason Kersey from The Athletic join us to begin the 7 o'clock hour. He covers the Oklahoma Sooners. And taking your thoughts as well, got Magooks tweeting in on Periscope. Texas troubles me, an athletic program known for selfishly throwing its weight around in a conference. Does that concern you, Joe Rextro, that Texas, to Magoog's point, it kind of is an animal all to itself? There is a lot of power that Texas holds in that state, in the Big 12. Would they try to hold the same amount of power in the SEC? My guess is yes. Does that concern you if you're the SEC about Texas in particular? I think Oklahoma maybe to a little bit lesser degree on that front.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that, and I would tend to agree. You know, Texas has been not a very good partner for various schools. You know, they have not played nice in the sandbox. And now, you know, you talk about like out-of-hand boosters and stuff like that. Seems to fit in perfectly in this league.
Yeah,
but maybe it's even a different level. So, yeah, I think that's one of a lot of things that a lot of people around the SEC are expressing reservations about. You know, it's just my question is, and again, you always talk about this in terms of you got to have 11 of the 14 schools to approve this happening. Is that enough of a concern? Is anything enough of a concern to get anyone but Texas A&M, who we know is trying with all its might to make this not happen and is going to have politicians, legislators. I mean, there's going to be a there's going to be a lot of opposition to this, but are there three other schools that would actually vote against us? Because when it gets to that, Greg Sankey and everyone, they're gonna have a lot of convincing things to say about it.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. David texting in, it's a shame for schools like Tulane, who is battling to get back to relevance. This will likely destroy the AAC that had made some big strides. This is coming from David in Murfreesboro. So talking about Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC and what that could lead to down the road, maybe being bad news for some group of five teams like Tulane and the American Athletic Conference. This could be very bad news in terms of competitive balance. I would say it's already bad in terms of competitive balance, but this would probably make it a whole lot worse.
Yeah, competitive balance, I mean, it's
a myth.
It's what it is.
Yeah.
And now, look, you get the UCFs who can, or you get the Cincinnati's, and that's great. I want that to keep happening. The tough part is, you know, financially, if you just have fewer opportunities to play these games that fund your programs, that would widen the gap. It's already big. I love, though, that we now still have some programs. And look, so let's take this to the super conference level. Is Cincinnati a potential consideration for the Big Ten? I mean, geographically, it makes sense. I don't know that. You know, the thing that you always have to remember here, too, is ultimately it's the presidents and the chancellors who are making these decisions. And as much as we laugh, like academic profile, the Big Ten has made a big deal out of that. Now,
big a deal? Is that why they brought Rutgers in?
Well, no, now that's hilarious. I don't know what happened on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and I don't have a name on this, but like last night at like 7:30, someone texted in that, like, the Rutgers was brought in by the Big Ten for, like, academic research purposes, which is awesomely, hilariously stupid. Yeah, they were brought in because of cable television subscribers in New York City, period. Now, did they have to fit the academic bill? Yes. Like, that was part of the chancellors were you better find people who, because they talked about other programs at the time, including actually Oklahoma was a Big Ten. They're like, you're out. They don't rise to the Big Ten level of academic, you know, rankings, U.S. News and World Report, whatever. A big thing is the AAU being a part of that organization, for example. So, like, it's a thing, but is it the thing that makes you do it? No. Money is why you do it. Big Ten and everybody else.
I would say so. But that academic research that Rutgers provides is very, very beneficial.
I'm sure it's very good.
I'm sure that it is as well. I don't know. I look at this thing in terms of suffering the most. Like, obviously, and Group of Five is a different discussion, and we'll have that a little bit later in the show. But just on the field, if you're in the SEC, like I think a team like Tennessee is a perfect example. If this happens, your journey, your job, your efforts to get back to relevancy in this conference just became that much harder, right? I mean, if you're, let's just operate under the assumption that it's 2025 when this happens, and it may not have to be that long, and we'll get to that a little bit more coming up to begin the 7 o'clock hour with Jason Kersey. But let's just say it's 2025 when Texas and Oklahoma comes back in. If you're Heupel, like, you've got basically 3 years to build this program up to a place where you could start to recruit pretty well, you could start to at least have a solid foundation in trying to get back to a competitive place in the SEC, which is hard enough as it is right now, obviously, as we've seen if you're a Tennessee fan, and then you throw Texas and Oklahoma in there as well, your journey just got pretty difficult, even more difficult than it already is if you're a team like Tennessee or like Ole Miss or like Kentucky or whoever's trying to take that next step. This is going to be very, very difficult with Texas and Oklahoma coming in.
Yeah, I mean, and that's roundtable we did, you know, of course, the question of losers. And I brought up Ole Miss and Tennessee. We talked about it yesterday. But Kentucky's another good one to bring up. Stoops has done a heck of a job with that program. And, 2 years ago, right? I mean, in a 12-team playoff situation, they're playing Georgia in a huge game. Now, of course, that team also got thumped by Jeremy Pruitt and company, which is bizarre. You got to be able to throw the forward pass. But point being, he's built a heck of a program. He's done more there at Kentucky than I would have thought possible. And that's a program that in a year you build up to a veteran, senior-laden team. Okay, in this 12-team playoff, you got a chance. But now, again, just go down two pegs. I mean, Texas has been very average, and on the field,
sure.
I've seen some of that too. Like, are you sure you want Texas? You know, they haven't been very, yeah. It's about money, and that has not faded at all. They are still as powerful as anyone. They have their own network, which gives them their own $15 million a year from that. Texas is still as powerful. But on the field, they've been very average. I would expect them. I mean, at some point, it's like you have to stop screwing it up there.
Right. Well, you would think.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, Sarkisian, I don't know if he's the answer or not.
Maybe Sark's the guy.
Well, maybe. If not, then it's Bill O'Brien's turn in like 3 years.
Yeah, maybe so. Just keep cycling through Alabama offensive coordinators.
Yeah, but it's still going to – I mean, you're right. I mean, it's just competitively, it's not good. And, again, I mean, I don't really like it either. I mean, the super conference thing, I like the idea of better games. If it happens, I don't feel like college sports is ruined or college football is ruined. I think the sport will be the same. I think it's still – like, I also – I go back and forth between, do I like college football or NFL better? NFL is the highest level. But I think college football, like the passion around it, and yes, even the creativity of the game and the – like the schematic differences between stuff like that. I love that. That's not going to change. Like, none of that stuff is going to change. But it just, I mean, the last realignment was some weird stuff that we're still living with. Then you get used to it and it becomes the norm. And I just, when something like this is basically just purely like you have to do it because our checks are going to be way fatter and we're going to make $20 million more than per school than any other league. Like, I can see, I understand why fans look at that and say, okay, what about us?
When we come back, we'll be joined by Jason Kersey from The Athletic, covers the Oklahoma Sooners. We'll get a little bit deeper into Texas and Oklahoma potentially joining the SEC coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.